Hey everyone, this is Noor Nasir, host of AdTech Unfiltered. For this episode, we continue discussing the hot topic of the year, the cookieless future and other new privacy and targeting regulations from big tech and how impacted parties should be reapproaching targeting and measurement. On the topic, we have an incredible guest. Angelina Eng is the VP of Measurement and Attribution at the IAB. She sets the stage on alternative options the industry should be exploring and things to think about when approaching these shifts in the landscape. A quick note, this episode was recorded prior to the recent news about Google delaying the deprecation of third-party cookies until 2023, but the discussion and associated advice still stands. This episode with Angelina Eng on the future of targeting and how to get a move on testing starts right now. Angelina, I really appreciate you making time today to chat about addressability and the future of targeting.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I think any conversation about addressability and identity and privacy and just the things that are linked to that topic require talking about the infrastructure. So I know it's something that people have talked about already at length, but I think for a refresher, it's good to just isolate or at least identify what the core components of concern are. So often people are just talking about cookies, but besides the loss, the impending loss of cookies, what else is at stake right now as it relates to the impact on the future of addressability?
Well, I definitely think it's not just about cookies. It's really about users and consumer privacy and the opportunity that we have right now to make some changes that can protect consumers and their data and be fully transparent. But for marketers specifically, as well as publishers, it's really around measurement and attribution. And given my subject matter expertise at the IAB, you know, there's a lot of concerns around the types of data that will be exposed and used and how frequently we get that data that helps inform how campaigns are performing. But it's also about being able to understand what's working and what's not working and where to invest dollars. And a significant part of the digital ecosystem relies on cookies to help enable marketers to make better decisions, optimize their campaigns, as well as measure how things are performing. And I think that this can result in potential revenue loss for a lot of publishers if marketers aren't able to attribute properly.
And related to that, there are so many announcements that people are just desperately waiting to hear about from many of the big tech players that are out there. So updates coming through from Google, from Facebook, I would say those two big players in particular. Are there any notable updates that we've heard from either of those players beyond the scope of what we've heard related to iOS 14 and the fact that Chrome is also going to do away with cookies?
Well, I definitely think that there is a lack of understanding of exactly how Google's privacy sandbox is going to work. There's still a lot of education that needs to be learned by both marketers and publishers. And it's going to be a challenge to figure out how to actually target users in the future. This idea of flocks or federated learning of cohorts concept, most marketers aren't aware that there is only one flock ID per browser, and that flock ID doesn't necessarily represent a specific behavior. And it's really around, you know, grouping a bunch of different browser activities across the ecosystem that behave in similar manners. And that could be a variety of different types of websites that each browser showcases. And so there's no labeling of that. And I think that a lot of companies are going to find that it's going to be a struggle to figure out which flock ID is going to work best for them and what is really the driving factor to why certain flocks perform differently than others and how we can help enable publishers to develop audiences that marketers want. And it's going to take a lot of one-on-one conversations between the marketers and publishers. And it's most likely going to be conversations with a lot of the bigger players and not with the smaller publications. So a lot of investment's probably going to move towards large publishers that have huge first-party data, a lot of content, And there's going to be a competition between a lot of publishers when it comes to how each of them are performing, because there's less of the ability to understand why certain publishers are doing better than others.
Everything you've just described. First, I asked you almost too big of a question, because who can just explain in a few moments like everything that's happening from an infrastructural perspective, because there are so many different and moving and shifting pieces, and the impact is just colossal. It's just impacting every single person who touches anything in the ad tech space. And like you said, really small players, really big players, a lot is going on. So maybe I'll take a step back and ask you a truly fundamental question for anyone who might be overwhelmed by that answer, because they haven't been following what's been going on as closely as the IAB and other involved ad tech players. If you're just coming into this and starting to develop this appreciation as, let's say, a marketer or a publisher for the fact that we're losing cookies, we're losing the foundation of addressability and measurement and attribution that we've so long relied on, what are things we can do today while cookies still exist that we will not be able to do at some point in 2022?
I would say that a lot of marketers should be restructuring their campaigns so that they're looking at their data either by device or operating system, or a browser, device, and operating system. Those three different elements. And start doing some analysis around, or correlational analysis around, how things can work through manual optimizations. Think about how iOS 14, the attribution and the data that's being transmitted is broken, in my opinion. And so therefore, marketers need to understand how iOS 14 data looks differently than what it would look like on Chrome. What we're asking marketers and publishers to do is start looking at aggregate data, but by browser, by device, and by operating system, and see what is performing and what's not performing, and using their site analytics to supplement what's performing, what's not performing. It's really important to do that, because what the data looks like in the future is going to be broken. So by focusing on operating systems, browsers, and devices, you can start making decisions on how to optimize it better. But the other factor is that the lack of real-time data is gone, right? So companies aren't going to be able to optimize their campaigns as quickly as they want. They're going to have to wait for data to show up 2-3 days later to make those decisions.
A lot of loss. And you've described a couple of the things that are happening out there, but some of the additional scary things include just the inability to retarget anonymous users who've taken some sort of action, like the loss of site retargeting and other types of retargeting, ad retargeting. I think that's something that maybe many advertisers or marketers still want to believe there's going to be an alternative solution that's going to closely replicate that. And then also the loss of lookalike audiences, something else that advertisers and brands and marketers heavily rely on. So there's just, and that's not even covering everything. I think we've touched on a couple of things there.
Well, what you're seeing now is like a lot of marketers are starting to build out their first party data by trying to get customers to register for an offer or for more information. But in order for that to work, they also need the publishers to build out their first party audiences. And what they can do, if there's enough audiences to match, is be able to still continue to use first party data and link those audiences together. And therefore, they can do some level of remarketing or retargeting, but it's only going to be a limited number of users. I think only about 20% of users that register for a particular site would be able to be targeted at any given time, which doesn't look very good for any type of retargeting purposes. But you can perhaps do a little bit more lookalike modeling and comparing publisher data to create those lookalikes.
I think what's so scary for marketers right now, and also publishers and everyone who's impacted, is feeling like they had some sort of process that they could keep their hands off of. And now what's being suggested, even by some of the answers you've provided, it just sounds infinitely more complex. Who's gonna do all those things? Where's the bandwidth to do this kind of work? When do we start testing? So I'll put a pin in that. I think something else that's going on is that some folks are going to be significantly more impacted than others. And I wonder if some people or marketers or impacted parties feel like they're just going to be less impacted or possibly not impacted. Do you think, Angelina, that there are people in the ad tech ecosystem who will not be impacted by these changes?
I think everyone will be impacted some way, shape, or form. I do think that larger marketers who have very sophisticated data analytics teams and are hosting or compiling a lot of data sets together will still be able to figure out how to go about marketing online. They'll have the money to invest. I think there's going to be more emphasis on panel-based measurement and overlaying that on consensus data. A lot of marketers are familiar with media mix modeling, especially given, you know, their investment in television, out of home, and print, et cetera. So I think they're going to take that model and leverage that for online a little bit more. Those marketers who are smaller to medium-sized, who don't have the talent or the resources to go about doing more sophisticated analytics, we'll probably see a bunch of different companies pop up that will help service them. But it's going to be hard, especially since the data is predominantly mostly post-click. In these last 10, 15 years, tried to get away from click-through rates and cost per clicks. Yeah. But I do see that coming back because of the changes.
Yeah, I think a big takeaway is that if you do have those larger sophisticated data teams, they may already be doing a lot of work, and maybe they've been doing it for some time to figure out what are those remedied processes going to be. But if you have some like one size fits all smaller shop where people are jack of all trades, now it's either you need to redistribute the labor to focus more on coming up with those alternative solutions for this, for sustaining addressability, or you may need to hire in some people who are going to specifically work on that, because it is going to be a time suck. And I assume that there are a lot of campaigns that, whether it's agencies or it's brands themselves that they're looking to entertain, that it's going to absolutely require people who are spending their time and energy around the clock figuring out what those alternatives are going to look like and what types of data they need to collect.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be interesting to see how the agencies evolve from these changes. In the agencies that I've worked in, there wasn't a lot of investment into the analytics group and being able to really understand what's working and what's not working, at least with digital data, because they've relied on the outputs that came out of the systems. But it will be interesting to see how they evolve and if analytics teams actually get built up to help them measure what's working and what's not working.
Yeah,
in a more cross-media approach.
I feel they're going to have to, because otherwise, like going back to a point that you brought up earlier, Angelina, is that all of these solution providers, and I almost say solution providers with air quotes, not to be disrespectful, but to say that a lot of brands and even, you know, smaller agencies that aren't well-staffed with sophisticated data and analytics teams are going to be vulnerable to folks that are offering solutions out there that may not, that just require more thorough vetting. And if you don't have those specialized talent in-house, then the folks that are maybe more focused on branding and strategy and other types of work may struggle to really do the types of appropriate assessments that are necessary to understand the viability of the solutions that are currently out there.
Yeah. And I think that one thing that a lot of brands have not invested in as well is in their ad ops team. Those are the guys that are actually implementing the campaigns and making sure that campaigns are set up properly, that the tracking is executed in a way that enables the analytics team to actually assess what's working and what's not working. And we often look at the ad ops team as a, you know, a team that's in the back room just creating tags and sending things out. But I think that There's an art form in how campaigns should be set up. And that's where the ad ops team can offer solutions and recommendations that a lot of companies don't actually take advantage of. So really where ad ops and analytics work hand in hand, when they do work hand in hand, you get better insights and results. Companies are going to need to invest in those groups as well.
Absolutely agreed with that. So shifting in a little bit of a different direction, we might have touched on this a little bit earlier, publishers versus marketers. I've talked a lot, or we've talked a lot about marketers and agencies and brands. At a high level, Angelina, how would you compare the challenges that are going to be faced by publishers given these shifts in addressability versus the challenges that are facing marketers?
Publishers, they have a different set of challenges because since they're not really measuring attribution, they really need to make sure that their content is attractive enough to bring in more users, and being able to set up their analytics in a way that they can contextually target or create audiences off of that first party data that they have through either registration data or site behavior. And I think that a lot of companies right now, they're since aren't adopting some of the standards that the IAB Tech Lab has put in place, would really help benefit them. And that takes work. And a lot of publishers need to figure out how they need to reconfigure their site content and analytics and be able to convince their management and the executive team to make these changes. If advertisers are looking for brand safety, more suitable content that's relevant to them, then it's important that publishers provide a better response in terms of what they can offer to advertisers. Publishers have to think about what advertisers really want. There's a kind of a conflict between their content integrity of what they feel that their values and their positions are versus what advertisers are looking for. And there's oftentimes that constant internal battle of what to create and what not to create. They need to develop stronger sales teams to be able to communicate back to advertisers what the benefits are. Advertisers have a different set of challenges because they're so used to targeting people across a multitude of websites, but now they're going to have to be more selective in the places that they want because they're going to focus on those companies that are going to enable them to see better data and use data that is specifically relevant to their target audiences. I would say they both have some same challenges, but a lot of it, they also have very different challenges because publishers have to cater to multitude of advertisers and advertisers have to cater to a multitude of publishers.
Yeah. Something you mentioned earlier about publishers and that there are many who haven't yet absorbed some of the IAB Tech Lab's, let's say, guiding principles or guidelines for moving into this future for addressability. And you kind of answered the question I'm about to ask, but I'm just curious to explore it a little bit more deeply. What do you think the reluctance is? What is the holdup? Is it that leadership thinks that what is being suggested doesn't need to be worked on right now? Are they in some state of denial? What do you think the reluctance is?
I think it's resources and I think it's timing. Publishers will implement new technology or new standards if they get customers to demand it. So they're not going to make any changes unless they have several advertisers saying, hey, why aren't you doing this or that? So as a good example, let's talk about VAST, right? So VAST 4, which is the new tech lab standard around online video to enable higher quality video resolution and higher quality files. A lot of publishers are still on VAST 2. And the question that they have to answer is, what is the incremental value of upgrading? How much more revenue is this going to generate while they're still kind of struggling to, or not struggling, but trying to maintain and manage the campaigns that they already have?
Yeah, it's a fair point. And I can understand that people are bogged down with today and making the time and the space to focus on something that maybe clients aren't yet asking for creates a little bit of a struggle. So speaking of time and resources, I also wanted to ask you a question about these alternative identity solutions and addressability solutions that are on the horizon, many of which the IAB has recognized as some of the hopeful viable solutions for the future. What's been put together by the Trade Desk and UID 2.0, and then also LiveRamp's identity link solution. In terms of just consideration of these particular solutions, what has that relationship been with the IAB, and are there other viable solutions that are out there? What does that evaluation process look like, and what are the messages that the IAB wants to convey to the larger ad tech ecosystem about the consideration of either of these solutions?
Even though it originated, let's just say the UID 2.0 came from the Trade Desk, what they decided to do was say, hey, you know, we're going to come up with this tech standard and this ability to transfer or match audiences on the back end. But they made a conscious decision to say, hey, this is not just a solution for us. This is going to be a solution that everyone can adopt. And let's come together to make sure that whatever solutions that we come up with are interoperable. So again, even though it came from the trade desk, we have a slew of ad tech partners that are actually vetting it, helping with optimizing the standard so that multiple companies can leverage it and be able to share audiences on the back end. And I think that's what's most important is being able to develop solutions that are interoperable, that can allow multiple companies to leverage versus having siloed solutions, because the more solutions out there that are doing things on their own, it makes it just that much more difficult for either publishers or marketers to adopt.
So, and it makes me wonder, as far as other folks, and by folks, I mean solution providers that are throwing their hat in the ring, hoping to put some sort of similar solution out there, that ultimately the market can't exactly adopt 10 different universal solutions. So do you think that it is going to be whittled down to maybe these two solutions and then a handful of others? Like what does the kind of like slimming down of the pack look like from the perspective of the IAB? And then also, are there other solutions that advertisers or brands and agencies should also be considering besides these two?
I'm not as close to the working groups on this, but I do believe that it will probably come up with one standard. And there might be, you know, a little bit of some variations to it, but there will be a foundational standard to enable identity resolution. We will likely have multiple ID companies to offer to marketers and advertisers. This is more of just standardizing the pipes versus the actual solution. So there will be multiple ID solution partners. We'll just have one standard to enable it.
And so I think extending from there, sometimes when people are talking about the handful of addressability solutions or identity solutions that are on the table, people are expecting them to be these shining beacons of hope that are going to make up the groundwork for everything that cookies once or still are capable of doing, and that they're praying that if they wait long enough, that one of these solutions is going to just really replicate a lot of what cookies once did, which we know isn't the case. What are reasonable expectations for brands and marketers to have as far as what these new addressability solutions can offer and what is reasonable for them to expect them not to be able to offer?
So the ID resolutions will be able to help marketers match audiences between themselves and the publisher. And again, it goes back to how publishers are also focusing on developing first-party data and collecting their own audience data. Publishers are only going to be as good as their own first-party data when it comes to ID resolution. But I do think that marketers are going to look to who's going to have the ability to target most of their customers, right? So they're going to look for those publishers that have much larger first-party data. Then they're going to look at publishers that have really good contextual targeting off of their first party data that is of unknown users, right? So because first party cookies will still be around, it's just that third party cookies are no longer to be here. So how well are publishers using their first party cookie data to target and create audience segments? And then you'll see direct buys, private marketplace deals, and contextual targeting kind of go after that. So that's kind of the hierarchy I see. You know, matching audiences, leveraging publishers' first-party data down to private marketplace, direct deals, and contextual.
So if those are the reasonable expectations for someone to have when thinking about this cookie-less future or this shift in addressability, I wonder when should a brand or a marketer or an agency know to call BS on a solution? Because I do think there are a lot of false promises that exist in the ecosystem right now. If you were looking at something that felt like it was definitely over-promising and likely to under-deliver, what are some things that marketers should be keeping in mind when they're doing that evaluation?
Don't take their word for it. Start testing. If publishers and work with them, right? Tell them what's working, what's not working. Do they feel that they're getting enough reach, their ads are being served properly with enough frequency, and if people are actually responding to their ads? So there's ways that marketers can start working with publishers to understand their audiences better. And in a lot of cases, just I want to take a step back, just because the cookie is going away and tracking is going to be more difficult, just because you can't see the data work doesn't mean that it's not working. That's where that kind of inference correlational analysis needs to come into play. So when you're working with, you know, publisher A and you increase spend, do you see a lift in quality users coming to your site? Marketers will still be able to leverage their tracking parameters in their ads. And since there's a more prominence with click-through rates or clicks, they should be looking at that click traffic.
I think the theme I'm noticing more than anything is that in order for you to call BS or to really vet a solution, there's a lot of deep work involved, more so than anything. And it just goes back to knowing that it isn't going to be this quick evaluation to figure out how to move into this future when cookies are, or specifically third-party cookies are, have gone away.
Yeah, and they can see that analysis now, right? So if they're running with a bunch of publishers and they're looking at their tracking parameters, look at that click traffic. I think PostView is going to be like one day for Chrome as well. I think that exists right now with iOS 14. So the idea of moving towards a 7-day click, 1-day post view, and again, breaking down that data down to operating system and browser and looking at your own site analytics to see if users are coming to your website through those different channels can help them make better decisions. A lot of clients rely on the third-party ad server or the platform data. I think they need to use a combination of that data plus their site analytics and even their CRM data to see what the impacts are.
Yeah. I wanted to also touch on just overall preparation for 2022, which in so many ways we've been talking about this whole time. But I wanted to uniquely highlight some things that you've written about and that the IAB Tech Lab has categorized as key things to lean into. There was mention of three shifts, one being unlinked first-party audiences. Second is browser and operating system linked audiences. And the third is linked one-on-one audiences. So I wanted to have some conversation around this and what each one of them entails, starting off with the first one, which is unlinked first-party audiences, which focuses on contextual like groupings and audiences, self-defined audiences by publishers and PMPs. Those are things that we've already had, but why are we having this conversation today about each one of these audience types? Do we expect them to be more sophisticated than what they've been in the past? Or are we just talking about them because they're just one of the few solutions that's on the table?
So the capabilities have always existed for that unlinked audiences. And that's where marketers have relied on publishers to use their data. I think this is a calling for publishers to adopt standards, to really think about how they're creating audiences for targeting purposes, and figuring out what level of transparency to provide marketers in terms of the types of behaviors that audiences exhibit on their site. Like I said, it's been around for ages. It's just that what we found is that when you go from publisher to publisher, they're defining their content differently, even though they might be in the same category. So what we're asking publishers to do is to adopt content taxonomy 2.0. And start modifying their content to align with that so that when they create audiences, they have a foundation to work with and be able to also create audiences through the audience taxonomy, which is also known as datalabel.org, which provides full transparency to clients on those registered user databases of how they created those audiences. So the size of those audiences, the elements that go behind creating those audiences, as well as the recency of the audience behavior.
So there's a good opportunity for many publishers to shift their approach to something that's long existed. And I think it's just for the overall betterment of the industry and the ad tech ecosystem. Because I think so often when people are evaluating the different types of unlinked first-party audiences that are out there, there's so much mystery around how they've been built out. Going to your point about the taxonomy piece, you're just wondering, like, what falls into this category? And hopefully if this is adopted, that more clarity and transparency is going to be out there for buyers to consider.
Absolutely. And think about the ability to transmit some of the characteristics of either the user or the page that they're on back to a client's ad server so that certain relevant ads can be served to those users. So the more insights that an advertiser has about a publisher's content or about a user, they can create better creative that's more tailored to the audiences that that will react to those ads.
I'm hoping that there's going to be more adoption of that taxonomy opportunity because it's for the betterment of the industry overall. So excited to see that be adopted. So moving from there into that second category, which is browser or operating system linked audiences. And we talked a little bit earlier about Privacy Sandbox from Chrome. We spoke a little bit also about Apple SK Ad Network. Can we talk about that in a little bit more detail? Because I think there's so much mystery around both of these things. People hear both of them a lot, but don't really understand what they're offering. Can we talk about that a little bit more, Angelina?
Well, can we talk about the confusion and the amount of proposals that are being presented? It's a lot to take in. For Privacy Sandbox is predominantly focused around Flock and Fledge, right? So Flock is specifically targeting a group of browsers or cohorts of browsers that show similar behavior without any full insights into them. So there's either 33,000 or 66,000 Flock IDs that are going to be available. So that's going to enable marketers to target anonymous users across the web based on these certain cohorts. And then there's Fledge, which is what I would say is closer to remarketing or retargeting a little bit, but will act differently. There will be certain events that you can track on an advertiser's site to create audiences from those behaviors. However, for both Flock and Fledge, audiences cannot be targeted unless they meet a certain threshold. That could be either 100 browsers or 1,000 browsers. We're not quite sure yet because there's still not a lot of details. Mm. But in general, it's anonymous targeting. It's taking signals that the browser is collecting and being able to leverage that for both the publisher and marketer. But there's going to be certain limitations on how you can use it and when you can use it.
What level of detail or specificity is being shared around what those events or behaviors could be? Because that's kind of what I took away, was that they are going to be organized, the cohorts are organized based off of behaviors or events. But are they giving us any semblance of understanding what those categories might include?
So Flocks are based on domain and not URL or page title. So it's only at the domain level. So it's only sites that each browser has visited within the last 7 days. And so if you are a user that visits the same sites over and over, so for me, it's AdExchanger, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Wayfair, etc., I'm going to be grouped with other people that have visited similar sites. So it's not going to be a digital media cohort. There's not going to be that. It's just going to be these types of sites, those behaviors, these types of people in that group. And there has to be at least a thousand browsers that exhibit the same behavior to be able to target those. Fledge is more, think about like how third-party tags work right now. All marketers will have a limited number of events that they can track on their site, and you can create audiences off of that. But again, you can't target those audiences until there's a certain threshold that's met. Again, not quite clear what those thresholds are. So if you're a site that only gets 100 people to convert a day, you might not be able to retarget those users or create lookalikes off of those users for at least another 10 days.
First, I'll just say what you've shared has given me more clarity, and I imagine other people who've read about cohorts more clarity and just what Google is bringing to the table. But I think there's just, even when you feel like you get it a little bit, there's still so much like poor clarity around exactly what that's going to look like and what the potential to activate and build media tactics and strategies around it are actually going to be. And I think it's just one of those, unfortunately, we have to still sit around on this, right? Like Google hasn't yet provided brands and marketers the opportunity to test with Privacy Sandbox. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's mostly publishers that are or ad tech companies that are trying to create these. But from my understanding is that publishers have to opt in if they want their site to be indexed as a cohort. And there's a few sites already that I've heard that are opting out of being able to be flagged.
Why is that?
I think they're basing that they would rather try and attempt to build out their first party data and have a direct relationship with marketers, which kind of makes sense too, because there's also a lot of publishers are very concerned about data leakage and their audiences being cannibalized. So it's a lot of them feel a lot of pride for their ability to create a marketplace for their marketers.
It's a good point. So just let me ask on that third point about linked one-to-one audiences via earned opt-ins. Curious about that. What does that opportunity look like? And do you think a lot of publishers and advertisers are going to lean into that?
So yeah, this is where the identity resolution partners come in. As I mentioned, even though we're working towards a standard like the Unified ID 2.0, there are going to be multiple partners that provide solutions. I think the challenge here is for publishers, which ones do they partner with? And do they have the bandwidth to try and partner with as many as they can? And for an advertiser is figuring out which partner to really stick with. They might decide to use one or three. It could get very expensive when it comes to partnering with an ID resolution. But I think, you know, a lot of marketers are going to have to weigh the true benefits of being able to figure out. I mean, you've got Nielsen, Neustar, LiveRamp, and Trade Desk coming up with ID resolutions. The question is, which one's right for the advertiser? And it's going to be different for each one.
Another super important point, and I think that even illuminates in so many ways, what has people resisting to sign up for one of those opportunities, because you don't have enough visibility into what any one identity solution is going to give you, and you really can't afford to sign up for everything. That's just going to be hard on your talent, the resources that are going to work on prepping those solutions and figuring out their viability. And then there's the expense piece, which I am just realizing in real time, I have no idea what the cost structure looks like to sign up for any of those identity solutions. So I am curious, are we in this waiting period right now? Or what should a marketer or brand be doing if they're afraid to make that leap into one of these solution providers that are on the table, these identity resolution opportunities? Do you just keep waiting and to learn for more? Or do you need to just make a leap? And if so, when? Today? Can I wait a couple months? What's some perspective from you, Angelina?
Well, you can always wait, but is it the right thing for your business is my question. If you really need to look at your system and how much data that you have on your audiences, and are you able to communicate with them? If you want to reach them outside, then you're going to need to work with an identity resolution partner and figure out which publishers that you are going to advertise with. So for advertisers, I would go ahead and start looking at which publishers that you want to work with, understand what their game plan is. So what do they project to, you know, in terms of the number of users that they'll be able to target and collect, and figure out together which ID resolution partner or distributor is going to work for them. Let's just say a class of B2B publishers may not be using a particular ID resolution partner, and they're using ID2, a second partner. So therefore, the advertiser should consider working with them or pushing, you know, hey, here are my partners. These are the guys I'm working with. Can we somehow get that integrated with the publisher side? So there's a lot of back and forth that's going to need to happen. And it's probably going to take at least 6 months to come up with a final contract with each of these partners. So if you're not working with them now, you need to start exploring your options.
Yeah. I feel like the big takeaway is that it's going to be a massive undertaking for any publisher, or rather, as we've been having this discussion, specifically any advertiser or marketer. There is no like quick fix on this. And I think we've just become reliant on a world where the ecosystem supported so many
existing solutions that we could very easily tap into. So we're not accustomed to doing this level of massive labor to figure something out. At least I would say that just from like a more general perspective, people are waiting for the day that somebody says, this is what you sign up for. This is how you can quickly execute. And what you've just described is just this truth about what people need to face.
Well, you know what the interesting thing is, like back in when I was a media planner, when I first started in 95, we didn't have all this tracking. We didn't have all this real-time data. We didn't have the ability to leverage our first-party data. So I do think that some of the old ways of how we did media planning and buying is going to come back. And there was an art to it, right? We tested out different publishers. So I do think that there's things that we can learn from what we've done 15, 20 years ago that we can still apply to today. We just won't be able to do it in real time. And so we just need to be a little bit more strategic versus relying on technology to do all the work.
Yeah. And in order to come to grips with what those limitations really are for your business, you got to get your hands really dirty and find a team of players that are going to do that vetting for you so that you're comfortable with what that scope looks like. So final question from my end is just in terms of making sure that you're staying educated on what all is going on out there and that you're turning to the shift in addressability opportunities that will be right for your business, whether it's from the standpoint of you as a publisher or a brand marketer. How do you suggest that folks stay knowledgeable so that they're not keeping themselves so distant waiting for some sort of news to be coming and knocking on their door? Like what's that proper cadence of getting yourself more invested in the work that you actually need to do?
So obviously follow the IAB and IAB Tech Lab because, you know, we do cover a lot of these topics in our events as well as articles and studies. So we've done quite a great amount of work around these very topics, and we're actively pursuing, you know, more opportunities to provide marketers and publishers the opportunity to meet a lot of these different solution partners. I would say that be sure to follow the trade publications, right? So, you know, a lot of them like DigiDay, AdExchanger, AdMonster, AdAge, AdWeek, all the well-known ones, is really lean in and read on those articles and ask your partners lots of questions. So if you're a brand, you should be, you know, don't just rely on your ad agency to solve this and take their word for it. Sit down with them. Get together with your compliance team, with your technology team, with your CRM team, your ad agencies, and a handful of publishers to really focus on what is important to you. What do you want to continue to be able to measure? What do you hope to get out of this? And a lot of them, I think, you know, if you collaborate and solve it together, is better than you just relying on your partners to do the work for you.
I think this is advice that can't be avoided. And if people have been avoiding it, they need to subscribe to it now and make it a part of their daily digestion of understanding what's to come and just getting yourself into a state of preparation for this inevitable reality that's coming up next year. So, I mean, I think we've gotten more technical truth bombs in today's episode than we have in the past because you're so closely attached to so much of this work, Angelina. So really appreciate you entertaining this conversation.
Well, thank you, Nora, for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks again to Angelina Eng, VP of Targeting and Attribution at the IAB. Great food for thought on how to get to work on necessary steps to prepare for a future where cookies and other sources of current identification continue to fade. The deprecation of third-party cookies being delayed by more than a year doesn't change the fact that architecting a personalized action plan is a necessary first step for every publisher, marketer, and agency. If you need more guidance on how to approach the future of targeting and attribution, check out the great resources at IAB.com. That's it for this episode. I'm Noor Nasir. More episodes of AdTech Unfiltered coming out real soon.